On today's Compassion Radio.
I had a party leader clue me in on two key factors. He said, first, some Christians believe that Jesus is the only way people can get to a heavenly eternity. Obviously, Papa C is not a Christian. Our party leaders are not Christians, and most of our country is not Christians. So it seems to be a very narrow view. We need to help the Christians understand that there's a broader acceptance so we have harmony and oneness in our country. I said, you know, my friend, I appreciate you sharing that with me, but we do have a little problem here.
Hi, friends. It's day two with our good friend and expert on Chinese history, both within the church and within the modern communist government. Dr. China has been a personal friend to hundreds who hold massive political clout and others who hold the unsurpassed power of God's Spirit and His Word. He's a man who bridges the gap. He's here again today to help us understand what the overthrow of Hong Kong's democracy will do to the people and to the church. We'll pick it up where we left off yesterday.
Hong Kong was ceded to the Europeans as a port.
Yes.
And Americans are not exempt. In 1844, we signed the Treaty of Wangsha. Very similar, a few differences, but we were in that horrible time as well. In the Second Opium War, however, it was settled by the Treaty of Tianjin in 1860. Key date. Mm-hmm. And Hong Kong was granted to the United Kingdom, not just to use the port to bring in drugs and abuse the people, but they owned it. And so from 1860 to 1997, China has waited patiently. And the lesson here is people who think that they're going to give up on Taiwan. They will not. And they say, we can wait a little longer, but we will get Taiwan back. And I believe that this is one of the reasons that they did not come down harder on Hong Kong earlier. The eyes of Taiwan are on them, and they're trying to woo the Taiwanese in and say, look, join our great and growing country, our prosperous country, our respected country worldwide. Join us, and we will respect your freedoms that you treasure. So one of the interesting things to watch now is what the response will be in Hong Kong and how it will impact the country of Taiwan to push it away or bring it to it. Now, they may not care. They're already running some naval ships into the port. And they've said if we need to take Taiwan by military force, we will do that. They've never denied that that's out of their privy. So that's some of what's going on in Hong Kong. And it's a major chess game or mahjong game. And we'll see what happens.
I'm seeing what seems to be two alternative midterm narratives being developed here because of the economic crisis and the COVID crisis. Crisis never goes to waste in an Asian society. You find the inflection point and you make the most of your opportunities based on what your long-term goal set is whenever the circumstances allow. Right now, the world's attention is focused at their navels because they feel like it's all about us. America's no different. We want our economy reboot. We want all these things back. We want. So we don't pay attention to those who actually have an effect or play a part in how healthy our economy might be in the future. China is central to that because we made it that way. We invested in them heavily in the 70s and 80s, opened it up to Western-style economics, and they adopted that. They didn't adopt our values or our political systems, but they adopted the money. Right now, that economy is on the skids. This is the time for them to be able to tell the world one of two things. One, even when the Western powers have fallen because they couldn't control this virus, we could. We conquered it. And when the economy collapses, only a government as integrated as ours can solve the social order problem when the economy collapses. So even if our banks are hurting, even if our industries are sidelined, we will persevere, we will survive, and we will assert our authority to show that it's possible for a country to survive, even at our debt load. We are going to survive. Watch us. And the other side is they're playing the Taiwan angle. Watch how gentle we can be with our neighbors, even when they provoke us. Both those streams seem to be what the messaging is coming out of Beijing right now. We don't read the tea leaves very well in this country. We never have. What do you think is going to be the interim of this? Taiwan is being softened up with gentleness. Hong Kong is being crushed under the oppressive thumb of being right on the border and right there. They can roll right across anytime they want to. How do you think it's going to play in the midterm before this COVID and this economic crisis is over?
As you know, it's always very difficult to predict the future if you try to do it before it happens.
Yes, sir.
But let me go ahead. You mentioned there's a well-known Chinese character that the figures represent both crisis and opportunity.
Yeah.
It's nothing that we need to tell the party about. They know it well, and I think you've said wisely they're likely to use this period of time. I believe that on the political side, they will say, we are dealing not with people's voices who have different sentiment. We are dealing with a threat to national security, and that needs to be dealt with firmly. The same type of surveillance, monitoring, censorship that's experienced in the mainland will be in place in Hong Kong, I would guess, within 2 years. They will also be able to say it's not just a worldview threat to our unity and sovereignty, but it's also a health safety issue we need to check. It won't be as easy to get in and out of Hong Kong as it's been in the past.
Yeah.
It's been almost like for Americans going into Canada or another allied country. And I believe that's going to change. What that means, I don't know. I think there will be increased monitoring when in Hong Kong for all foreigners and probably all people.
Right.
So that's one thing.
We're talking about biometrics here. When foreigners like you and I step across their borders, they don't have a whole lot of data points between the times we were there last and the times we visit now. So they can collect a whole lot of updated biometrics on us when we are forced to go through a much more rigorous entry process. They've got our thumbprints, they've got our recent retina scans. They've got new facial recognition updates and stuff. So their AI is reading us more updated and more concentrated than the average person walking on the street. So we are being farmed for that data every time we go in and out of China proper. And now Hong Kong becomes a new front door for that.
Oh, absolutely. But all the things that are now in place in mainland, I think will soon, if they're not already, going to be in place within the next 2 years. And it'll become a different environment. Years ago, I wondered how many times I'd been through Hong Kong, and I counted 60 chops.
Wow.
So I'm pretty familiar with the city. Now, will they go so far as to rename some things like Stanley and the Peak and Victoria Harbor? That I don't know. That's a PR issue. But ministries that have found Hong Kong to be a safe harbor may want to reflect upon their strategy and their approach. On a more serious level, at least to me as a believer, I think that they will take their approach to Christianity, make it similar in Hong Kong to what it is now in the mainland. And let me explain very quickly, because I think it's vital your listeners understand. There's a new approach to Sinicization of Christianity. I was at a major event in November, and that was a whole theme. It just means that you want to have Chinese decorations and Chinese script. Well, it's far deeper than that.
Oh, yeah.
I had a party leader clue me in on two key factors. He said, first, he said, you know, some Christians believe that Jesus is the only way people can get to a heavenly eternity. And obviously, Papa Xi is not a Christian. Our party leaders are not Christians, and most of our country is not Christians. So it seems to be a very narrow view to hold that. We need to help the Christians understand that there's a broader acceptance so we have harmony and oneness in our country.
Yeah.
I said, you know, my friend, I appreciate you sharing that with me, but we do have a little problem here.
Mm-hmm.
And I read him the passage where Jesus said, broad is the way that leads to destruction and narrow is the way that leads to everlasting life. And we smiled. We are friends, but Sinicization, when spoken of by the party, is basically universalism.
Yeah, you know, of a kind of atheistic type.
Sure. They say, well, everybody gets to heaven. We get there different ways.
Before we go on to the second point there, I want to make sure we get serious about the point. They're not saying that they believe in heaven. They're simply saying that if we're going to entertain that notion, it needs to be synthesized with the values we put on the leadership of party and therefore their ability to harmonize the country and make it peaceable for the purposes that we have decided China exists. They're just entertaining the notion of it and saying we're not going to condemn the thought, but they're not saying they believe in heaven or in eternity.
Well, the Chinese have always spoken of heaven. They have the Temple of Heaven. The emperor went to commune with heaven once a year at the temple, so they could redefine it through different terms, and that's a rather technical linguistic discussion. But they don't believe in heaven as described in the Bible.
Correct.
They don't believe that Jesus' faith in the Lord Jesus Christ and his death, burial, and resurrection is the only way that we can attain eternal life. So they do have a unity issue. The problem is their constitution says Christianity is permitted.
Yes.
So how do they allow Christianity yet have harmony?
Yeah, bend it to the vision you have for it.
They're okay with Christians as long as they aren't evangelistic Christians.
Yeah.
And that becomes an issue.
Okay, so what's the second point then?
The second one, equally concerning, is my friend said, you know, our president, Papa Xi, has recently been quoting the old saying, religion is the opiate of the people.
Mm-hmm.
He looked at me knowingly as a friend and said, and of course we don't want our children exposed to opium.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is key.
Yes, it is.
First, they immediately last began to shut down all evangelistic publishing for children and anything related to parenting.
Right.
That was an immediate result. Secondly, let's go back to our discussion about Hong Kong. What was the issue? Opium. And what scholars in China will point out, and I think they're accurate, every time foreigners come in, received en masse, they also bring in their missionaries.
Mm-hmm.
And so you think through some logic here. Opium, missions. Then it ends in the Boxer Rebellion. Then it ends in the Taiping Rebellion. Then it ends in civil war.
Right.
In the Chinese party mind, they see a connection between foreign mission, or what they call religious invasion, and disruption of their sovereign state.
We'll be back with more insight from our own Dr. China right after this. Thank you, friends, for standing with Compassion Radio during these times of great change to our normal life. Of course, there's nothing normal about our situation, but there's also nothing normal about the kind of faith and power we find in Jesus. Compassion Radio will continue to keep bringing you encouragement from the Word, inspiring stories from the front lines of faith, and awesome opportunities to make a difference for the kingdom around the world. But we need your help right now to continue doing just that. Please take a moment today to consider how you might help us to accomplish our unique media ministry and mission. Here's how. Just visit our website, CompassionRadio.com, or call our toll-free order line, 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Reach out to us whatever way works for you. And now, back to our discussion.
In the Chinese party mind, they see a connection between foreign mission, or what they call religious invasion, and disruption of their sovereign state.
In the way that the Middle East countries have portrayed, and not unjustly, that the American presence within their countries amounts to two things, aerial bombardment and marine expeditionary forces. The idea of nothing but violence as being the expression of what Western values are. In nations where violence is the standard operating procedure on the street, and has been for hundreds of years because the Quran does not forbid or speak against violence or harm, it lionizes it. They look at the Westerners doing something that they couldn't even accomplish, which was the utter destruction of countries. In some ways, I would think the most violent of them, amongst the jihadists, are jealous of the capacity of the Americans and the Western forces to visit such destruction on countries, and at the same time preaching against it. So they have this construct, then, that all Westerners amount to drunkards, soldiers, and bombs. The Chinese have projected all of those negative values from the worst parts of capitalism back in the 19th century as being the core, the foundation upon which all modern Western values are built. Not unreasonable conclusions, but they're also twisted for the purposes of advancing their ultra-control of their people. So that's what we're fighting, friends, is not just the Chinese communist resistance to the West and its economies. We're fighting a cultural rebellion against the notion that Western values, capitalism, and expeditionary missionaryism is all co-linked. You can't tear the missionary away from the opium in the minds of most secular Chinese. That's the big question.
I believe you summarized it very well, and I would hope that all your listeners understand as you and I visit together with them, what you're saying, what I'm saying, is not necessarily the whole story.
No, it's not. We know that one point.
All we're trying to do is help our listeners understand better what is going on in Hong Kong, what's likely to change in Hong Kong, and what the party leaders will say to justify their actions.
Yes. So, let's get down to the brass tacks here, my friend. Dr. China, what does the church in the West need to know about what's happening in Hong Kong right now? And what should we do? How should we pray? How do we read the news that comes to us in the months to come?
I'd say number one, accept what's probably going to happen and pray for the safety of all the people. I mean, Chinese and Hong Kongers and foreign guests, you know, pray that this isn't a bloodbath. That's not going to help anybody. Number two, the freedom that the churches have enjoyed in Hong Kong is very likely to diminish in the next 2 to 5 years. Number three, if ministries feel led to do something to serve the people of Hong Kong, don't do it later, do it sooner. We often say, a Chinese saying is that a journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first step, and it's an appeal to patience. Maybe this is one time where patience could be put on the back burner, and we could say whatever open doors are given to us, let's take them while we can.
Yeah, we've seen a number of windows and doors close hard on us over the years, Doctor. We were there right after the downfall of the first wave of resistance to the Taliban, when there was a vacuum in Afghanistan. We were there helping the churches to rebound and to get their seeds planted and to help reopen the schools. We brought lots of gifts from the American Christians to build friendship there. That door slammed shut about 5 years later and has not opened yet.
Mm-hmm.
That very well could happen on the east side of Chinese territories that they're claiming for themselves now. I take your challenge on that. Perhaps you and I can talk after this interview is over about ways we might practically find what could be done in Hong Kong, and we could pass them along to our listeners and partners.
I think we can do more offline, and more than that, we like to deal with each individual group separately, and not one size, one approach fits all. I think that's a little problematic. You know, I would leave them with a verse, a portion of a verse, Joshua 3:4, second half. The people of Israel were encouraged to follow the ark as it entered into the land. The last part of the verse says that you may know the way you shall go, for you have not passed this way before. And it could be a reset button for all activity in Hong Kong and China. We need to take a fresh look, follow the presence of God, and not just assume that what we've done in the past can continue on into perpetuity.
Or that what the Christians and their legacy in Hong Kong have experienced. They have like 5 or 6 generations now of people that have lived with a certain kind of expectation for freedom of expression, for freedom of religion. They see themselves, the most eastern part of China, as being the most western of the country. They have expectations that are going to be dashed shortly here. So we need to be praying for them, too, as they follow through this quagmire. They haven't gone here before. This is the first time they've been taken over by a communist entity in totality.
Yep.
So we need to definitely be praying, especially over the kingdom there in Hong Kong, that they would be strengthened and that God would give them everything they need to be reaching their brothers and sisters in their countries, to not abandon their faith, to not be crushed beyond hope, but that hope would rise up within it. What's the third thing, Doctor?
I think you touched on it. It needs to be an intercessory time, but we said don't be patient. If you have something to do, go ahead and do it now. And I really think that would be my admonition. I could get more iffy and guess-like and things, but I think what we've said is pretty certain.
Yeah, I'll be praying too and looking for opportunities to find out how your friends and allies there throughout mainland China are going to start trying to make friends with those churches in Hong Kong that are going to be subjected to the same kinds of privations and demands that the central government's given them. There is going to be a time, an opportunity for this church in Hong Kong to enter either into an abject kind of oppression or finding ways to build relationships with their brothers and sisters in mainland China that they've never been able to before. I do pray that that would yield new fruit and new cooperation and a new sense of mission for the church as they enter this new phase.
Amen.
Is there anything else you'd like to add, Doctor, as we say goodbye today?
I don't believe so. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, and I think even as this broadcast goes out, I would hope that whoever listens whether they be believers in the West, whether they be party members in China, would understand that the true body of Jesus Christ wishes for peace.
Yes, they do.
We truly, genuinely want peace between our two countries. And our desire to share the good news of Jesus Christ is not a political, adversarial position.
Yeah.
So anything we can do to build friendships is positive.
Yep, and it's important because the world systems that we're dealing with are corrupt at heart because they're based on the works of man. I mean, there's just certain kind of fundamental differences between the kind of governments that humans are capable of versus what the kingdom is already. The kingdom already has its king. It already has its blessing. It already has its legacy and its heritage embedded within it. When we go to church every Sunday, we have stepped into sanctuary and refuge. And if we treat it that way, even if the government is demanding their pictures be put on the walls, but we go there because we know that Jesus Christ wants to meet with us and remind us how much we're loved, we have hope. And we need to be thinking about that as we go to our churches, either online or as things are starting to reopen here in the country, that we don't forget our brothers and sisters around the world, especially in places like Hong Kong and China, that are under tremendous pressure from forces that do not want to see Jesus become preeminent. They want to contextualize him, make him a historical figure, and demand that the country, the culture they're within, follow the leadership that is now. They don't want to hearken back to an ancient history that seems to be so full of contradictions historically. They want something fresh and new and exciting, and it's going to be them, not Jesus Christ. And we say exactly the same thing about the once and future king, Jesus coming to rule and reign, but with great compassion, with great love. That's the Jesus we're preaching, not the one of power and oppression. So, Dr. China, I thank you so much for again reminding us of our better angels here. As a church, we need to be intercessory all the time, lifting up those things that God brings to our attention, to our hearts, and you've done a marvelous job getting context today. Anything else happening out there that we should be aware of and pray for?
Just pray we can get back into China. I mean, I book and rebook, and fortunately the airlines are good about that. The big issue right now, we can probably fly back in, but we're quarantined for 14 days.
Do you think there's going to be any resistance from the party against you and your work right now? Are they on the watch for you? Or do you think they're going to be wanting you back because they know that you're an honest broker?
I don't know. I'm actually doing a webcast. I've got 35 of our clients online Tuesday. I'm sure that'll come up. I've tried to be a friend to China on our approach, but there's many that are being invited to leave. And I don't know what the future will be. I think as we talked about in Hong Kong, there's going to be a missions reset. And they may say, you know, you people with 10-year visas, we'd like for you to reapply. Let's look at a little more scrutiny of what you're doing and why, and because we're in a Cold War,
right.
And that's something we didn't get into, but we're in Cold War too, no question about it. So what are going to be the rules of engagement in this new Cold War? It's been heating up, it's out in the open now, you know, there's been a tit-for-tat sending of journalists home. Where's this going to go? I'm not sure we're going to win this propaganda war. And there are a lot of reasons for it, but that almost becomes political. I mean, I think they're making more headway than we are with it. 23 years ago, I said, I'll do this, Lord, as long as the doors stay open and the money comes in. So that's where we are, Bram. I've never made any prediction. What we do, the scale, scope, and nature, openness, shouldn't have been done at all. My key predictions. One, the potency of Guangxi we have depended upon for missional work in China and all Chinese endeavors in the past will gradually diminish as a core factor for future missional success. Number two, we're in Cold War II. It's here to stay. The mountains are no longer high and the emperor's never far away because of modern surveillance and technology.
Yeah.
So unless you have Guangxi all the way up to Papa Xi, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Your best friends may want to help you, but can they? And so that's going to change. You know, I don't know what your theology is, but I think we're heading for a world dictator after Jesus comes and technology's in place for it.
Yeah.
And Western ideology is not guaranteed to win this war. While the human race is probably not at stake, liberty and freedom to preach the gospel may be. Number three, the USA is likely to lose the propaganda war. I saw a presidential candidate that was a socialist. I didn't see anybody running for president in China who's a Democrat. 2024, we are likely to see the end of the third wave of foreign evangelical mission work in China in the next 10 years. And so what should we do if, in fact, foreigners are summarily told to stay out like they were during the Cultural Revolution?
Thank you again so much for joining us on Compassion Radio.
Always a joy to talk to you.
I know that right now most of us are concerned, if not consumed, with worry about the desperation, fear, and violence pouring out in our own streets this week. We're concerned, too. We're praying for a just peace. It can happen, friends. And if you haven't considered it yet, I challenge you to join us in seeking God's heart for our country and all the people in it. May the Lord speak to you as you invite Him to share His heart with you. I have much more to say about that on our website today, so visit us at CompassionRadio.com to learn more. When you call or write us today with your tax-free gift, make sure to ask for Michael O'Brien's brand new music project, Crown Him, available on CD or for digital download. Our toll-free number is 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. And you can find us 24/7 at our website, CompassionRadio.com.